Hello and welcome to today's episode of The Quad Shot, where we help you down and digest the day's most pertinent cancer news. It's March 23rd, 2020. Welcome to The Quadcast. Let's dive in. First up, NSAID, who said? There's a lot of hysteria out there over whether or not to take ibuprofen. Well, to be honest, there's a lot of hysteria out there just in general, but specifically, we're talking about NSAIDs. Much of the hysteria was flamed by the widely disseminated accidental fake news that the World Health Organization, or WHO, officially discourages NSAID use in the setting of an active COVID-19 infection, when really, one spokesman just spoke too soon. But all of this was born out of the real publication describing the mechanism of cell entry for the novel coronavirus SARS-CoV-2 that hinges on angiotensin converting enzyme 2. So what drugs upregulate ACE2? Lots, actually, including ACE inhibitors, ARBs, glitazones, and even, you guessed it, ibuprofen. Next came the provocative observation that diabetes and hypertension comorbidities were overrepresented among initial fatalities of COVID-19, suggesting a possible link, not with the chronic diseases, but with their chronic treatments. The bottom line is, there's no hard clinical data that ACE2 promoting medications like ibuprofen worsen COVID-19 infections, but you might think twice before popping it if there are alternatives during this pandemic. Thanks to Wan and Fang in their respective publications in the Journal of Virology and Lancet Respiratory Medicine 2020. Up second, on the up and up. There's no level 1 evidence to guide the optimal adjuvant treatment of locally advanced upper tract urothelial carcinoma. Systemic therapy is often extrapolated from bladder cancer. However, outcomes for upper tract urothelial carcinoma are worse than those for bladder cancer, and guidelines provide fairly weak support for the routine use of adjuvant chemotherapy. In the POUT trial, as published in Lancet 2020 by Bertel et al., an impressive 260 patients with either muscle-invasive or lymph node positive upper tract urothelial carcinoma were enrolled following nephrourethrectomy. Most had muscle invasive disease, as only 1/3 even had lymph node dissections, and fewer than 10% had pathologically involved nodes. They were then randomized to receive no further therapy versus 4 cycles of gemcitabine and carboplatin or cisplatin. 3/4 in the chemo arm completed all 4 cycles. As expected, toxicity was higher in the chemo arm, which resulted in a transient decrease in quality of life. But here's the kicker. At 3 years, adjuvant chemotherapy significantly improved disease-free survival, taking it from 46% to 71%, which represents a 25% absolute improvement, which is huge. Distant metastasis-free survival was also improved, but overall survival results aren't yet mature. The bottom line is, adjuvant platinum plus gemcitabine for muscle-invasive upper tract urothelial carcinoma dramatically improves disease-free survival. Up next, don't hate, ablate. Early-stage renal cell carcinoma is the new early-stage non-small cell lung cancer. And what we mean by that is we're about to see a turf war between surgery and stereotactic body radiation, similar to that has been raging in non-small cell lung cancer. Currently, just as in non-small cell lung cancer, SBRT is reserved only for cases of medically inoperable early-stage renal cell carcinoma. With that segue, here comes another classic, a retrospective NCDB analysis comparing outcomes between partial nephrectomy, SBRT, quote-unquote ablation, which was either cryo or thermal, and observation. Most predictable is the conclusion that SBRT with a BED of greater than 100, assuming an alpha-beta value of 10, is associated with better survival than observation. But this is not so when the BED was less than 100. This was compared to similar survival advantages seen with surgery and ablation. But wait, there was something else. The cohort numbers. Surgery had over 65,000. Ablation, over 17,000. Observation, over 18,000. And appropriately dosed SBRT, 62. The bottom line is, if nothing else, this further supports the maxim. If you're treating RCC with SBRT, go ablative or go home. Thanks to Grant, Advances in Radiation Oncology, 2020. Up next, know your data. There are only a limited number of treatment lines for pancreatic cancer. A small proportion of patients with BRCA mutation are eligible for the PARP inhibitor olaparib. Otherwise, how do patients with advanced pancreatic cancer fare with a precision medicine approach? The Know Your Tumor, or KYT, program, sponsored by the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, PANCAN, provides molecular testing for actionable mutations with associated therapeutic and clinical trial options. Importantly, it's not a clinical trial. Over 1,800 patients were referred to the program, and over 1,000 underwent molecular testing, with a total of 677 also having survival outcomes. Among these, one quarter had an actionable mutation. Surprisingly, only 46 patients, 24% of those with actionable mutations, received matched therapy. Among these 46 patients, median overall survival was double that of the 488 patients without actionable mutations, 2.6 years versus 1.3 years. At the same time, there was no difference in median survival between those with actionable mutations with unmatched therapy and those without actionable mutations at all. The problem here is that the graphics on PANCAM.org showing a massive survival benefit from the precision medicine approach could be pretty misleading to patients. The fact is that the 6% of patients, 46 out of 677, who used the KYT program had excellent survival outcomes without accounting for numerous clinical and treatment confounders. The bottom line is, while it's a leap to suggest from this data alone that precision medicine and matched therapy results in a greater than 1 year improvement in overall survival, it does seem promising to enroll such patients on basket trials. Thanks to Pishvayan, Lancet Oncology, 2020. Up next, double down. Initial reporting of the landmark KEYNOTE-189 trial brought pembrolizumab to the first line for wild-type non-small cell lung cancer after proving improvements in survival across all PD-L1 statuses when added to chemotherapy. Nearly 2 years later, we have updated reporting, with median follow-up extending from 11 to 23 months. And during that time, it's lost no shock value. Median survival with upfront pembrolizumab clocked in at double that of chemotherapy alone, 22 versus 11 months, respectively. And again, a significant, in any sense of the word, survival advantage persisted for all, including no PD-L1 expression, with no difference in grade 3 to 5 toxicity rates. The bottom line is, first-line pembrolizumab has transformed the landscape of wild-type non-small cell lung cancer. JCO, 2020, Gadgil, et al. Up next, tele-oncology. You better get ready for it. Preventing transmission rates among patients with cancer diagnoses calls for some practical solutions, including calling your follow-ups rather than asking them to expose themselves in the clinic, which, let's be honest, are primed to be hotbeds for the spread of COVID-19. Whether or not to delay surveillance imaging may be a more difficult call, though. A lot of this fear, for oncology patients in particular, stems from, well, beyond common sense, this case series published in Lancet Oncology 2020 by Liang, detailing outcomes for 18 patients infected with COVID-19 with active or previous cancer within China. Most worrisome was a report that the rate of ICU admission, intubation, or death was nearly 5 times greater among these patients at 39% than other hospitalized patients at 8%. The bottom line is, based on very small numbers, patients who carry cancer diagnoses appear to be more susceptible both to acquiring COVID-19 as well as to succumbing to worse outcomes. Up next, FAQs. Questions are nothing, if not frequent, amidst the current COVID-19 pandemic. ASTRO has now posted a frequently updated question and answer page to provide evolving answers to how to manage radiation oncology practices in crisis, in addition to some summary guidelines. Check out more details at the ASTRO website, astro.org. Finally, oligofractionation. Amidst potential staff shortages surrounding COVID-19, there's never been a greater time to hypofractionate. Here's a RADONC crowdsourced living document that outlines low fraction options across several disease sites. Check it out at RADONC Tables 2020. This concludes today's episode of The Quad Shot. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and subscribing to our podcast. Also, check out our website at www.quadshotnews.com and subscribe to our newsletter. We'll catch you next time.